By downloading or listening to this podcast, you are agreeing to Moody's legal terms and conditions found at moodys.com/disclaimer, including that the information provided is not investment or financial advice, and that Moody's will not be liable for losses arising from your use of the information.
The performance of asset-backed securities in both the U.S. and Europe has held up relatively well over the past year as virus outbreaks ebbed and flowed. Now, growing economic activity in the U.S. and many European countries is bolstering borrowers' ability to service their debt, as payment moratoriums and other forms of relief come to an end. That said, we're not out of the woods yet, with many borrowers still on payment holiday, especially in southern European countries. I'm Aaron Johnson, and this is Moody's Talks, Securitization Spotlight. In today's episode, my fellow research writer Ruth Mantell and I will talk with Nick Manzillo of our Structured Finance Group in New York and Tony Perry of our Structured Finance Group in Europe about the drivers behind the stronger-than-expected collateral performance over the past year and how we expect deal performance to evolve in the coming months. But before we get started, a quick programming note to our listeners. We'll be taking August off to take in some sun and returning with a new episode in September. So for today, Ruth, why don't you and Nick get things started?
Thanks, Aaron. Nick, it's great to have you on.
Good to be here with you as well, Ruth.
Since the pandemic started, there have been all sorts of programs and policies. What do you think has been really crucial to help borrowers throughout this time of extreme financial distress?
Yeah, so I would point mostly to government stimulus programs supporting performance, especially during the early portion of the pandemic when unemployment was particularly high. I'd point to three government programs that I think were impactful. Firstly, the expanded federal unemployment benefits of about $300 to $400 per week really aided borrowers when unemployment rate was still relatively high at around 6%. So those benefits are still contributing. However, when a large portion of the U.S. population was unemployed, those enhanced benefits really helped them to continue making loan payments. And we did see, indeed, performance for basically across all loan types really held up during the pandemic. Secondly, I would point to the direct stimulus checks to Americans. Those bolstered people's savings accounts during the periods in which they received them. And actually, we did see performance in terms of delinquencies and loss rates improve pretty markedly in the months directly after those stimulus payments were distributed. So it's interesting, you could actually really see the direct impact on ABS performance. And thirdly, and I think probably less substantially, but still contributing to good performance, is the moratoriums on federal mortgage and student loan debt that continues to run through the end of the year for the mortgage debt and through September for the student loan debt. You know, as borrowers are managing their debt loads, they have to choose which loans they have to pay. And if they don't have to pay their student loan or their mortgage, it just leaves more cash available to pay for other loans.
And aside from government support, what else has been going on in the sector that could help aid borrowers' finances and their ability to support collateral underlying ABS?
From the government support, we did see a large amount of non-mandated servicer support in the form of deferrals, so payment deferrals for auto loans in particular, where a borrower doesn't have to make a certain amount of payments and they're not considered delinquent. Student loans, we saw a pretty large scale amount of forbearance on both private and federally held loans. And in particular for autos in March, April, and May, we saw pretty large uptakes on those deferral programs. They really, you know, helped borrowers maintain their cash balances as unemployment rose pretty substantially. What we did see is that the credit scores of borrowers that received those extensions in April and March of last year really spiked compared to historical loan extensions. And, you know, we can attribute that to the servicers casting a wider net and not requiring really any proof of hardship for those extension grants. And consequently, we actually saw those loans exit those extension periods and perform really well compared to prior extensions, so pre-COVID extensions.
So even though the pandemic is still with us, servicers have made this effort to pull back on some of their accommodative policies. Why is that? Why is this the right time for them to be doing that?
Actually, this was happening even, I would say, the beginning of the second half of last year. Servicers started to revert their policies around June and July. And what we did see is that the uptake of those programs really fell quite substantially. So at this point, really for the past several months, extension rates have been pretty in line with what they were pre-COVID.
So we're in this position now that we've got support from both the government and servicers really starting to wane. What does this mean for ABS collateral?
That's really, at this point, our expectation. You know, these federal programs that I talked about earlier, specifically the unemployment benefits, are expiring through September. And actually, in about half of states, they've already expired. So we do expect the rising employment to kind of aid borrowers in helping them get a little bit more normal forms of cash flow to support their payments. Specifically, we're expecting the unemployment rate to fall to 4% by the end of next year, which would be in line with what we were seeing around 2019. So if that level of employment holds, then we don't really expect any material deterioration in credit performance.
And to wrap up, for our last question, can you please talk to us a little bit about how you see different borrower types and/or asset classes faring going forward?
In particular, if we do see any disruption in employment growth, whether it is from new flare-ups of the virus with lockdowns, things like that, I think the non-prime borrowers in particular that may have been reliant on these unemployment benefits that are expiring, or borrowers in the hospitality or travel sectors could be particularly affected.
Thanks again for joining us today, Nick.
Well, thanks, Ruth and Nick. Turning to Europe, a short story here is that more than a year into the pandemic, the performance of collateral in ABS and RMBS waiver rate has not really deteriorated. It will not deteriorate as a result of the pandemic as much as we initially expected. Tony, can you tell us how that is?
Yeah, thanks, Aaron. Indeed, the performance has been remarkably good, actually. If you look at the traditional performance metrics of arrears, defaults, and losses, we actually saw very little movement over the past year, and that's despite the very severe economic fallout that we all observed last summer. However, transaction cash flows were still materially impacted. We did see a large drop-off in principal and interest receipts into transactions because of widespread payment moratorium programs that were introduced as a result of the pandemic, but also prepayment rates declined heavily in some sectors last summer, which again slowed down cash flows into transactions. And these sort of alternative performance metrics were things that we kept a very close eye on over the past year. And although most of them now have recovered to the pre-pandemic levels, there's still a few spots there where we're paying close attention. And despite the levels of arrears and defaults staying low in most cases, there were a few pockets where these other metrics are worth keeping an eye on.
You talked a little bit about government support measures and lenders, other types of supports from lenders, services, et cetera. Nick talked a lot about those on the U.S. side. And to what extent have those been big drivers in Europe lately?
Yeah, absolutely. They were the thing that really helped throughout the pandemic. Absolutely the main driver in Europe, for sure. The generous government support measures, these payment moratorium, sort of government-sponsored payment moratorium programs, but also service of forbearance programs as well, were behind this surprisingly strong performance that we observed. In particular, I think it was the job support programs, though, the furlough schemes, etc., which really kept unemployment in check. I think sort of summer last year, we had some fairly stark unemployment projections out there. But now, although we expect some unemployment increase as these schemes roll off, it will be more modest now, and hence the impact on performance going forward will be more modest as well.
And I assume now that you mentioned, as the schemes roll off, we're going to be looking at economic improvement as the main driver going forward, do we think?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the strong economic growth that we saw back end of last year and into early this year, has really sort of helped on the back of those support measures that I mentioned. And in fact, that economic recovery has been so strong that early stage arrears in most sectors are now below even pre-pandemic levels. So, the performance is particularly strong. And there's been secondary consequences to that as well. I think the sort of pent-up demand that has built up through the pandemic and the improving consumer confidence on the back of this economic growth, also the sort of vaccine rollout success that we're having now, has spurred strong house price growth in many markets, and also, you know, used car prices have been very strong as well. So clearly, you know, two big credit positives for RMBS and auto ABS across our markets.
And I think one of the key things you mentioned there was markets, plural. Europe being a big, diverse continent, it's not the same story across the board, is it?
No, like I mentioned earlier, you know, there's a few pockets that we're keeping a close eye on. Some of the southern European countries, and for example, Italian and SMEs, we still see very high levels of payment moratoriums. So, you know, around half the collateral in our ABS SME portfolios are still under some form of payment moratorium. And so again, those alternative performance metrics, reduced cash flows into transactions, are something we're keeping a close eye on. And I think the key question really is, you know, when will those schemes be pulled back versus when the economic recovery really takes hold? And the timing of that is critical. You know, if those schemes are pulled back a little bit early before the recovery is really underway, you know, we will see a high roll rate from payment moratorium into default. If it's time later, that roll rate will be lower. You know, that said, the use of payment moratoriums through the pandemic has been a fairly weak indicator of future performance deterioration. We saw very high take-up rates of payment moratoriums across many asset classes, across many markets. But like I said, the actual performance deterioration didn't follow when they matured. So I think even in that case, you know, mentioned the high numbers in Italian SMEs, you don't necessarily expect a high roll rate into default.
And I think something that's important for our listeners to remember here, you mentioned the roll rates into default and payment moratorium rates within deals. Not all reporting is created equal in Europe. Deals don't necessarily report loans as delinquent in the same way or on payment holiday in the same way. How much does that skew our perspective here?
Yeah, absolutely. That's going to be a big headache for many years to come, Aaron, I think. You know, we've seen across markets, across asset classes, across services, the reporting standards, you know, are very different. And we still see cases where borrowers who maybe took out a temporary payment holiday, like I mentioned, the fairly weak indicator of future performance issues, being lumped together with, you know, some of the more, you know, traditional types of restructurings that you would have seen for real credit impaired borrowers, where, you know, that is a true indicator of future performance difficulties. You know, these things being lumped together in reporting. And so, you know, picking those apart going forward is a headache. And it's, you know, it's a problem that's going to take many years to sort of roll out of transaction performance.
And when these government support measures do end, even with this renewed economic activity, what's going to happen? Do we have a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly expect unemployment to increase. But like I said, it's going to be a modest increase. But there will be some increase in unemployment when these schemes come to an end. You know, last summer we had this sort of fairly stark projection across most markets of high increases in unemployment. But I think in all cases that's now much more subdued, because the increase in unemployment will now be more modest. The impact on performance by construction will be limited as well. And, you know, as a result of all of that, we've actually recently changed our collateral forecast projections to stable from a negative view last summer, so that most of those cases now we have stable outlooks in terms of collateral performance going forward, despite that modest increase in unemployment. But as mentioned, you know, a few pockets where we still a bit more cautious and have negative collateral performance outlooks.
I think what you said about the collateral forecast reinforces our point that performance has been steady, and even that modest uptick in unemployment we don't think is going to have that big of an impact. Can you talk a little bit about how this all affects our ratings?
So far, the pandemic's had what has been a fairly limited number of downgrades. So far, there were a few, but pretty limited given the, like I said, given the economic fallout. You know, those swift policy responses we saw last year have really prevented any long-term credit implications for most borrowers, in our view. But as mentioned, it did have a significant impact on cash flows into transactions. And then because of that, the level of upgrades was much lower last year than, you know, you might have otherwise expected. The prepayment rate, I mentioned, was very low in many sectors last summer. And so the level of deleveraging in transactions was much lower. So as a result, we saw much lower upgrade rates. But into this year now, with that economic recovery, with those alternative performance metrics of, you know, the cash flows going into transactions recovering back to pre-pandemic levels, we have now, you know, started to see upgrade rates come through in many sectors, and hence, you know, obviously that's built upon our collateral forecast as well, which as mentioned are now largely stable.
All right, well, thanks, Nick and Tony, for that. I'd consider an upbeat picture you've painted of the current structured finance landscape. And thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we hope you can join us in September when we're back on the air for our next episode of Moody's Talk, Securitization Spotlight.